The Garnet Wager is a show where two players compete in a fantasy-style competition while watching episodes of The Genius. Players accumulate points based on the actions of their chosen fantasy contestants in the game show, and these points are tracked over the course of the season. The player that wins in fantasy points for that episode wins the episode, and can assign media homework for that episode. The loser must report back on that media at the end of the episode. This competition is not just for the hosts. Rules are made available to anyone who wants to play as you listen along with us. Welcome to Season 2. Welcome to the Garnet Wager. Begin.
Hello, friends and folks, and welcome to the Garnet Wager, the number one genius podcast on this side of the universe. My name is Alan, and I'm joined by Six. Six, how are you?
We're not the number one podcast on
This side of the universe. Don't ever sass me.
It's not unless sass, you want to. It's just like me being just a pedant. Yeah. Hey, folks. How's it going?
You can't, me or the folks?
Well, you are not a plurality, so them.
I contain multitudes, though, according to Walt Whitman.
Really?
Yeah. I was like, oh, everyone knows that classic Walt Whitman reference, and then I realized you don't read poetry much.
Well, I wasn't a big Whitman fan.
Oh my god, did you know I carry a copy of Leaves of Grass in every backpack I've ever owned since I read it for the first time?
Is that true?
Yes.
Huh.
It's very good. It helped me come out. Anyways, this is the Genius Podcast. This week we watched Season 2, Episode 10, Big Deal Game.
This game is kind of a big deal.
It's a pretty big deal. I'm going to go ahead and at the jump here and say I really like this section of the Genius Seasons where it's like everybody's playing at 100%. There's just enough people that we're all talking to each other. There's not too many people that it's like hectic, and it's just very focused and very strong. I was very satisfied with this episode. What about you?
It was a really strong episode. As you say, it's like we still have enough people that there's interesting dynamics going on, but everyone's here to play and everyone has earned their spot, you know?
Yeah, there's no more of like, this person doesn't seem to know what they're doing, or this person wasn't really here to win the long game, or blah, 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 all these things that we talk about all season. It's like, no, these are all people who know what the hell they're doing in both the main match and mostly in the death match. And if I have any sort of weird kind of negative of this, like, broad spectrum talking...
Is that you want still here?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry, don't mind me.
It's the fact that... So, we're joined this week by some special guests. We are joined specifically by the Korean boy band Super Junior.
Oh, it's a boy band.
Yeah, they're like a K-pop group.
I had no idea what their fucking deal was.
Really?
I was like super, like when they said like Super Junior, I was like, is it like some like younger group of like game show players? I don't know what's happening. I had no idea who any of these people were.
You would
and I never figured it out.
How experienced Shindong was that you would be like, oh, they probably like... have played this game before. But no, he's just a huge nerd and he's a big fan of the show. No, Super Junior is a K-pop group, straight up. They're a little bit older. I ended up doing a decent amount of research on them, trying to like understand how much of a get it was to have Super Junior on your like game show. And it's a pretty big get. I mean, they were like the biggest boy band at the time back in like 05, 06 when they first started. They were like 10 people. It's only 4 people at this point in the show.
Apparently only the smart ones is what we're told.
Yeah, I think the full group, even in 2014 when this aired, had more people. They just brought the ones that wanted to play the most. So we got Shindong, we got Kyuhyun, we got Eunhyuk, and we got Sungmin. Some very nice boys, very handsome boys. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying they do all right. I was agreeing.
Yeah, they're nice. I just think it's cool that Shindong is the only fat K-pop star that I know ever at all, ever.
I keep interrupting you. He's one of like 6 K-pop stars that I know, so apparently the ratio is really good.
There you go. No, I love K. I've recently gotten really, really deep into K-pop, so I was like, oh, I vaguely know about Super Junior. Like, I've heard that name mentioned before, but they're a little bit older. They still do music. They're the group, like the group makeup changes all the time. Shindong's not in. I don't think he's in the main group anymore. Or if he is, he wasn't in the music videos that I watched. But they're all cool and they're all pretty smart. And the game we are playing this week is Big Deal Game. You mentioned to me that you had some trouble at first understanding what was going on in this game. Tell me more about that.
I mean, once play actually began, it was fine. The explanation of this game is kind of incoherent. Like,
yeah,
hearing the
bad
rules said, it's just like, what the fuck are you talking about?
It's one of those ones where I was like, please, please, for the love of God, tell me we get a rehearsal. And then we do. And I was like, okay, good. Because without a rehearsal, it just, I wrote here, like, it just seems like auction stuff. Like, it's, it doesn't seem clear, like, how are you supposed to game this? What is the point of the teams? What is the point of anything? But basically, there are 5 colors, and every round, everybody gets to be a master, and the order that they become masters is random. And when you're a master, you get the colors that are presented to you. You get between 2 and 5 colors at a time, and the number of colors times a point value per round, 5 for round 1, 5 for round 2, and 10 for round 3. Are multiplied to make the total number of points available that round. So if you had 2 colors and you're in round 1, then that's 5 times 2, that's 10 points available. And as the master, you get to choose to distribute those points to whoever wants them, as long as they have the blocks that correspond to the colors that are available to buy from.
And they have to make the offer, right? Like, you can't just be like, okay, I'll give you 1. They have to have offered. It's
they
like,
have to
okay,
offer it to you.
I'll take 3. And you're like, okay, 3, sold.
Right. And if you don't want to give anything to anyone, you can, whatever. I don't know what the actual phrasing of it was when it's like, I choose to opt out of this round.
Like, it's a negotiation breakdown.
Right. To do a breakdown, that means that you get just the flat number of points for each round. So 5 for 1, 5 for 2, and 10 for 3. And that's it. You get those points. Nobody else gets anything. The thing that was the only thing, well, at first, like, yeah, I did not understand the rules. I had to re-watch the rules section completely. And then, once I started the second half of the episode, I was like, all right, I get this. I understand why this works. Because the other thing is the 4 genius players are also, paired with each member of Super Junior. And I think, what is it? Like, the genius players know who they're paired with, but the Super Junior person doesn't know necessarily who they're paired with.
Right, right. And it's a partnership, but like, there's a lot of like there's misinformation and stuff because, yeah, as you say, the genius players know what's up, but the Super Junior players just kind of have to like figure it out by intuition and guesswork.
Right, which leads to a lot of fun stuff early on, where they're like, "Hey, you're on my team. Are you sure I'm on your team? Yeah, you're totally on my team. Here's our alliance." And then like 5 minutes later, the cameraman is like, they were not on the same team. Like, it's a lot of opportunities for them to kind of play around with that.
Or poor Jiwon. I feel really bad for Jiwon this episode because Jiwon like immediately goes to his team and he's like, hey, listen, and sort of like sneakily hands him a note. And the note's like, hey, we're on the same team. Let's work together. Like, good luck. And he's like, and his teammate's like, this is obviously suspicious. There's no way we're on the same team. And Jiwon's just like, what do I do? Like 3 different times he pulls him into a room. He's like, what do I have to do? What do I have to do to convince you? And his teammate's like, this is really shady. And Jiwon's almost crying.
Yeah, it's really tough being the player and trying to like be like, no, I'm honest, I swear. And then also, some of the players lie about who's on their team and kind of decide with each other, amongst each other, like, we're going to swap who we say is on our team and make a play together. I think it's really smart that the Super Juniors players, Super Junior, not Super Genius, fuck. They get prize money if their team is the only team that wins. So they get about 5 million South Korean currency, which is like 450 grand or something. No, four grand, I think, 4,500. So it's enough money that they're like, oh, I want to, not only do I want to win, I want to be the only, we have to be the only team that wins. Because if there's any tie, then they pick the elimination candidate from the people who lost, and none of the Super Junior people get anything. So they have the incentive to A, believe people who are on their team, and B, like, work in really tight partnerships and give their teammate all of the points that they can. So the rehearsal round goes pretty straightforward. Nothing too crazy there. People start forming alliances pretty fast, though. It seems like Shindong, I think, was my standout amongst the Super Junior players in terms of, like, this guy really knows what he's doing and really wants to win. Because he's straight up like, I will make alliances. I know how to play the genius. I watch this show. I'm a big fan. There's a really funny moment in the middle of, like, one of the rounds where I think he's talking to Sungmin or something, and he's like, I really wanted to actually be on the show at some point. And then Sungmin's like, listen, I'm super tired of this. I don't know if I want to do this again. And then Shindong's like, wait, if they offered you season 3, would you not take it? And then Sungmin's like, well, like, if they gave it to me, I mean, I wouldn't say no. But Shindong's clearly, like, kind of a fanboy, but also really good. He's kind of like this episode's Hong Chul in a way, which is probably why I gravitated towards him.
He's not that... I mean, like, they all have their game faces on in a major way that I feel like Hong Chul broke... Well, okay, his character was breaking character, so it feels silly to say breaking character.
Right.
But, like, he broke the game face often enough in a way that I don't feel like Shindong does, but Shindong just sort of, like, pokes fun at the game without ever stepping outside to be like, hey, guys, isn't this a joke? You know?
Well, he does joke about himself as a person, though. Like, when everybody realizes who their teammates is, he starts to think, like, wait, am I not teamed with someone? Because nobody told me that I'm their teammate, and everyone else is doing stuff, and I'm just going to walk around the house and, like, kind of kick the dirt for a little bit. And it's a really funny moment.
It's a great, because he's like, listen, I'm just going to go for a walk, and my teammate should probably come find me. And, like, while he's waiting for that, he's, like, just, like, doing a tour of the house and, like, taking pictures of things. He's, like, a tourist.
Like, doing selfies in front of the attic or whatever. Like, hey, I got to be in the genius house for a day. Of course I'm going to enjoy this.
Should have just grabbed Sungmin and be like, excuse me, can you take my picture, please?
Yeah, excuse me, sir? He actually, speaking of him and Sungmin, he throws some, like, old man shade at him, and he's like, oh, you do that song, like, the old pop song, and then he, like, does the weird dance that Sungmin does in that old music video, which I sent you, and man, every time I remember that Sungmin did K-pop in the 90s, I'm so happy.
I had forgotten, like, I remembered, but I didn't remember any of his music. I remembered that that was a thing, and the little snippet of music I got, I was like, that was actually pretty good.
It's kind of fucking fantastic. Well, because it's a different type of group than you see now. It's like it's co-ed, first of all, which is awesome. And it's, like, very rap heavy, like, way more rap heavy than modern stuff is.
I think that's what I want.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I have complicated thoughts about the rap stuff in K-pop. It's often, at least in the modern stuff, like, super appropriative and feels like we are doing the cool rap thing, but, like, they're doing raps. There's nothing wrong. Like, rap is not, like, exclusive to non-Korean people. And then just, yeah, when you blend it with pop in that specific way, Win-Win is the song that they're referencing. It's fucking awesome and feels like nothing else you've ever seen. And they're wearing, like, Matrix outfits in the performance videos, and everyone's in, like, leather. It's a vibe. It's extremely 1999. The Matrix just came out. Everyone was super into their shit. But they have some fun dialogue, and after I understood the sort of rules of the game, I was trying to pay much more attention to, like, plays not players, baby. I thought it was really fun in general, just watching everyone try to, like, subtly convey who's on their team and, like, do little gestures behind him, like, hey, maybe you should come to the garage, because your teammate is in the garage. Like, not just Shindong, but everyone was kind of doing that. It's a good time.
I feel like Yuan actually stood out as doing the best plays this game.
Yeah, really, yeah.
He really excelled, and I was really impressed by just a lot of his, like, I mean, okay, this is the first time, like, cutting ahead a bit to fantasy points, this is the first time anyone's ever gotten find a trick to win the game and successfully leverage it and not won, because he wasn't trying to get himself to win. That's like, he did some shit this, and I was really impressed with his play.
Part one, because we watched this episode in two parts, ends with Sungmin sort of realizing that Yuan might be up to some shit, and he says, I think I'll have to take a long walk with Yuan. You're like, well, I mean, someone's gonna die on the genius. Finally, we're gonna have a full-on murder. This is wild.
He says, talk. It's not that bad.
I'm gonna have a long talk with you on. Even though still, it's...
No, I mean, that's ominous, but, like, if it's a long walk, it's like, I mean, you know, like, so I can find somewhere to drop the body. This is just more like, you've made Father very angry.
Now you will have to go to the bone zone. Like, it's a little spooky. I really like when Song Min leans into becoming, like, the weird Palpatine, and, like, best moment of that, easily. Two people are arguing as part of his alliance, and one of them is, like, faking an argument. And he pulls one of them aside, and he has, I wrote this line down, encourage conflict like that. Push that conflict further. And it's like, he's Palpatine! He's just the dark side! It's amazing!
He does a good job. It's very good.
Him and Yuan, yeah, they both seem to know that, like, you don't have to just play with your teammate. You can do some really fucky stuff and win the game in cool ways.
I mean, honestly, I feel like in terms of play, I would rank it as Yuan, then Jeonghyun, then Songmin this episode. And
yeah.
Jiwon's there in the building.
Present.
Yeah, his for the main match, he just seemed like kind of hopeless. He didn't really have any mind games. He was just trying to convince the one person who he told the truth to that he was telling the truth. Which, you know, given how much time he spent lying this whole season, I think is pretty decent poetic justice. I'm not crying any tears for Jiwon and his fate this episode.
Right.
But yeah, I feel like Yuan does some big plays. I am confused as to Jeonghyun's thinking.
He seems to set up an alliance and then not play to it.
Mm-hmm.
Is how
exactly.
I understood that.
Yeah, like he gets a knock for betraying this episode because he does. Yeah, he sets up this alliance. He's like, okay, we're gonna work together, and then. Like, so it's like, okay, round one, you know, you help me out. Round two, I'll help you out. And round two, he just doesn't. And that's the moment where nope. Yuan's like, okay, I'm gonna fucking destroy you.
Yeah.
And obviously he sort of fails at that because Jeonghyun's still here at the end of the episode. Spoilers. But, like, he does pretty masterfully take away his win and then force him into the DM in a way that I respected a lot.
So you're referring to, Jeonghyun?
I guess I switched subjects mid-sentence, didn't I? I respected what Jeonghyun was trying for, but I feel like he stepped to the wrong person, basically. Like,
yeah.
Yuan seems if, like, okay, Yuan's first action on this season was stepping into the door and pointing at Jin-ho, no. Like, what's up, motherfucker, I'm here for you. Uh-huh. Like, that's not the guy you cross.
Yeah, no.
That's the vengeful one. So I think it was a bad decision to do that to Yuan. And, you know, not like he picked. It was sort of like, okay, we're the only two people with blues. That's just sort of how it went. But
well, that kind of negotiation stuff ends up playing into the DM, the whole, like, choosing who goes to the DM moment, which we have to talk about. But before we get there, I mean, there's a lot of good plays in this episode, and even in the negotiations. What they realize pretty quickly is that having a rare color, like, most of the time that they did, well, during the distribution, only two people had blue. And what they realized is, like, oh, if I have blue and there is a category where blue can purchase, then it's like I have a huge monopoly on the ability to get points right now. And so they use that and sort of, like, make these bargains in the middle of the game that are really like, oh, I know what I'm doing. I had this plan from a while ago. I figured if my thing was going to be rare, then this is how I would do it. Like, it feels like they came into this match with really strong plans this episode.
And I feel like it's not even a case of, like, they talked beforehand and conspired. It's just sort of like, they're the final four.
Yeah.
They know how this works. They had that moment of just, like, exchanging looks and being like, so we're just gonna fucking stand together and fuck him over, right? It's like, yep. No, of course.
And it's at that point that Sungmin is like, oh man, the blues are really disgusting right now. And then he just, like, melts into his podium. Like, he doesn't want to play anymore because he's me. He's like, oh no, everyone's fighting. It's really funny.
And then he wins against his will.
Yeah. Jeonghyun starts with a pretty good lead, and then Sungmin wins against his will. I like that the point totals are calculated at the end of each round because it felt like it was moving back and forth really fast.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't feel like a sweep, you know?
We'll talk about it a little more in the DM, but I just want to commend the editing this episode because I really feel like this episode had great pace.
Yeah, yeah.
In a way that we've had trouble with before. Yeah. And I didn't feel like it ever really dragged. It always felt like stuff was happening that was interesting, and when stuff wasn't happening, they edited it to make it go by quickly in a way that it was like, you know, no, this is a good pace for this. Yeah. Again, we'll talk about it more in the DM, but it really did a good job.
And some of them play into that. Like, they're not here to just mess around and be funny forever. Like, Shindong, when it's his turn to be master, he's just like, all right, you, this many points. Whoever wants this one, that many points. Done. Next round. Like, he's just playing fast and loose, and it's good.
That's one of my favorite things, is the few times that people were like not being like, okay, what'll people give me? They're being like, I'll give you 3. And it's like, you can say yes or no.
Because
yeah.
I think later in the second half, he's like, am I allowed to do this? That's fine that I can, like, tell people what I want them to get, and then the announcer's like, there's no rule against that. Go for it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It keeps things speedy, and it mixes up the, like, tension of the episode a little bit.
And it also, it just grabs control, because I feel, you know, there's this push and pull when you're master, when it's your turn to be in control of the negotiation, where it's like, okay, you have the ultimate say on whether it happens or doesn't, but you're kind of trying to get stuff from people. And with that kind of tone and approach, you are psychologically putting the pressure of like, no, this is how things are going to be. You can get on board or you can fuck off. And I think it's a very strong psychological strategy.
They're playing the role of the master really well.
Mm-hmm.
There was some weird, like, I mean, there was a lot of comedy actually in this episode. I didn't write all of it down, but I think at one point, like, Jung Hyun really gets into the comedy this episode. He says,
"Oh my god,"
he's like the comic relief now of the season. Saying stuff like, if I go to the DM this week and lose, I told my wife and kids that I'm gonna really just hang out by a river and stare out at the water for a long time. And then he turns that around, he says that a couple times, and then right before the DM starts, he's like, I don't really feel like going to the lake tonight, fuckers. Like, whoa! Jung Hyun, what are you doing? He also says he mentions that he picks like 8 as a point value that he's going to sign someone. And he's like, oh, the 8 that's popular in China. And he kind of gets these looks of like, what? And then I like Googled it and I was like, oh, yeah, 8 is like the lucky number in like Chinese culture.
Hmm.
He's like, he pulls out these like weird. It's honestly, it's like the type of pop culture references that like my dad would do, where it's just like, oh, no one says this. This is like a thing my grandfather like knows, but we don't talk about it anymore. Like, Chinese numerology is not like a well-worn subject. But
so kind of like when I make references to the Street Fighter movie, that kind of like.
Well, that's like a.
Of course.
It's like, can you give me your best Jean-Claude Van Damme in that movie, please?
Bison. I don't Bison. Want your dirty money. That's the best I got. It's not great, but it's funny.
It's fantastic. Oh, you got the point across. Bison. Oh, see, that's like essential to culture, though. Everyone should know that film by now.
That's true. That's true.
It's just good. I mean, that's most of the stuff I have. I know after the break, the cool thing they do at the end of the match is they just start consistently making like all 5 colors go up at once.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, no holds barred. Everyone's betting now. We're all putting points in. And then people keep doing the corny thing of like, I bet one, I want 1 point. Give me 1 point. What is the, is that a joke play, or is there something to asking for 1 point?
Well, it's a couple, it depends on who's doing it. Like with Yuan, it's because he wants to give points to other people. That's his intention. For some of them, I think it's just like, I am happy with like, it's like, okay, the person who's got this, they're not a threat to me. I don't care if you win points. Let's just get this over with. Or like, I just want, I'm sure at some points it was like, I just want this game to end 1 point. Let's not fucking negotiate. Just take the 1 point and end it. But a lot of it's just like, oh, I think that's my teammate, or I want this person to win. Cause like, there was also, among the members of Super Junior, there was some like wheeling and dealing as far as like, hey, if I win, I'll split the pot. Right?
Right. I believe it was Shindong and Kyuhyun who agreed, or Shindong and like Sung.
There were 2 different agreements. So.
Yeah. Who were basically like, if you win the 5 million, you give me 1 million.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of thing, which is smart. That's really smart. That's like, hey, I know this game is complicated and we don't know how the alliances are going to land, but I'd like to go home with something.
Yeah,
it's, you can't really do something like that in the Genius, so it's nice that like in these side mini games they can do that as much as they want.
And if I ever hear about any of you motherfuckers doing that at Evo, I will kill you myself.
I'll personally open a vendetta on you. Wait, why?
Because that's bullshit. Because that, like,
come oh, like here throwing to, like, games, you mean?
Right. Like, I mean, even if you're not intentionally throwing games, if you are going up there, like, being like, okay, let's pot split this, it's like, you're not going to play your best. I want to see your best. I want you to give it everything you fucking got.
We'll talk about Evo. Hoofa doofa.
Yep.
But yeah, so the game proceeds as normal. It seems for a while like Junghyun's team is going to sweep, and then Songmin and Songmin take it all at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And they get their lone winners, which is pretty exciting. But what happens is, I believe it's Junghyun who goes to the death match, and he chooses... No. Who is that exactly? I don't remember
why. So, Yuan loses, and Yuan he's the elimination candidate.
He takes Junghyun to the death match.
And then he busts out the token of immortality, because he...
Songmin does.
Well, Songmin busted out, but it's sort of like they had an understanding. And Yuan's understanding was like, I really hope you'll do this for me. And yeah. Songmin was like, listen, that was the plan the whole time. I wanted to play that it wasn't, because I want... Like, basically, I feel like... I don't know how much of this was communicated to Yuan. I'm guessing less than I would like. But I think Songmin's plan basically the whole time was like, I want to get by using the psychological pressure of the token of immortality to stay safe, but in actuality, I'm going to use it on Yuan.
Mm-hmm.
And if that was clear between them, that's awesome. If it's not clear between them, it's a little less awesome, but I'm still think it's a decent move, you know?
I would really I love those scenes. Like, it was like several flashbacks in a row, like four or five flashbacks in a row of like all the different times that Songmin has been like, well, you know, Yuan is the reason I have this token, and I would not have found it without him, and I could use it on myself, but we're running out of episodes where I can do that, so I should probably use it on him. Maybe I should use it on him, and then he does.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cool like look into his mindset and why exactly he chooses to do that before it happens.
But it's also, I mean, like, he talks enough that there's also the counter thing of, like, well, maybe they edited it to make it look this way, when in actuality, next week his token would be worthless, so he has no reason not to use it anyway.
Right.
You know?
I think it's just more, yeah, it's a question of, like, did I want to save this for myself to save my ass, or should I save somebody else? And then he kind of, like, they frame it like he's doing this big selfless thing. Of like, I chose to keep my alliance alive at the end of the day, and now I'm going to give him my immortality.
But in reality, he gave someone a soda because it was about to expire and he couldn't drink it.
Pretty much. It's like, well, this coupon expires tomorrow. I guess you can have a dollar off of Trail Mix.
Hell yeah.
CVS. I like Trail Mix a lot.
What's your poison? What kind of Trail Mix you go for?
Just the straight up American ass. We're talking raisins, we're talking cashews, we're talking peanuts, almonds, and I think that's it.
Almonds and Trail Mix are a crime.
No, they're... So, okay, fine, sorry.
No, I just wanted to do the drop the bomb and then the smooth transition. If you actually want to object, that's fine.
No, I don't.
Okay. Because you don't disagree. Yeah, and so that's how things go down leading into our death match, but we're going to hold off on that for a moment. Because we got to talk about some homework.
Homework. Homework. Work. Work on the home. Work at home. This. Well, you can send it up.
This is the homework wager. So, I had you watch the grand finals of EVO 2018's Dragon Ball FighterZ competition between Sonic Fox and Goichi, two players, one from America, one from Japan, facing off in a set.
Correct. You also specified that this was to be watched while consuming a can of Bud Light Watermelon Rita.
I forgot that part. Yep, I sure
did.
Yeah,
but like the cool, like the best part of it. No offense.
No, I mean it was an inspired choice.
Yeah, So I'll talk about both things, obviously. Like, the acquiring the beverage is fun because I have a local liquor store that is honestly starting to learn my name, and I don't like that. It makes me really nervous. They didn't believe that this was a real thing. They're like, wait, they make it like watermelon one now? That's crazy. I thought they only made strawberry. And I was like, please, just let me pay my, like, $8 or whatever and go home. Please, please. So I got a 4-pack, and I just finished the last one. Let's look at the clock. 5 minutes ago. Yeah. And I like the beverage a lot. I think the beverage is wonderful. It kind of takes a second to get good, like all alcohol, at first you're like, oh, this is kind of like bitter, and like the margarita part is like not very good. I'm not a big fan of this. Mm-hmm. And once you pair it with like a little snack, like I eat it with a little bit of like peanuts and some like other mixed nuts. Very good combination. And once you're like a third of the way through the bottle or the can, you're just like, oh, hell yeah. Fuck me up, beverage. So it's really nice, and it's paired really well with some amazing fighting game matches. So for the listener at home, Six is like the god of fighting games, the lord of fighting games. In that, V is very is like. Would you say you're that's like one of your biggest hobbies?
It's one of my biggest hobbies and interests. I do try and make it clear that I'm not particularly good. I've invested enough time that I'm not bad, but I'm not good.
I've beaten you in Guilty Gear before, so, you know, nobody's perfect. And so you have been, like, slowly infecting our friend group with the poison that is fighting games for the past couple of weeks. We all watched Evo together, and I think it's worth mentioning that I think we watched this match live.
We watched parts of it, yes.
Yeah, but it was one of those things where it was, like, five people on a Discord call, and, like, nobody was paying attention. And I remember you being like, oh, I'll just watch it later. And, like, literally, like, the next day, I heard people being like, that DBFZ fighter, the Dragon Ball FighterZ finale was amazing. And I was like, oh, I didn't even get it. And once I sat down and just, like, had the lights off and was like, I'm going to pay attention for 35 minutes, really unraveled itself as this, like, beautiful ballet between two incredibly talented players. Goichi and Sonic Fox apparently have had, like, a pretty long-lasting rivalry.
The interesting thing, Goichi is previously they haven't competed in, like, basically, to my knowledge at all. Sonic Fox was always a champion of lesser known American games. He was a champion of, like, Injustice and Mortal Kombat and Skullgirls, mm-hmm. these games that didn't have a big stage outside of the US. So Skullgirls does okay in Japan. And then Goichi was a champion of, like, Guilty Gear, who almost never left Japan. There was this, like, you talk to people in the Guilty Gear community, and you'd play Guilty Gear at Evo, and you'd a Japanese player would win, and they'd be like, yeah, but I'm gonna go home and get the shit kicked out of me by Goichi, so it's fine. And finally, with the release of Dragon Ball FighterZ, Goichi's like, I'm actually gonna go overseas, I'm actually gonna see what the competition's like. And ever since the start of this game, the release of this game in, I believe, February, those two have just been going at it. Just trading games back and forth at any time one of them or the other is stronger, and it's been an amazing rivalry.
Right. So we have an amazing rivalry set up. We have an amazing game. Dragon Ball FighterZ is sort of like the apotheosis, if I'm using that word correctly, and I'm probably not, of what's a specific genre known as anime fighters. So like people who know what fighting games are know what Street Fighter is, which is like it's not an anime fighter.
Nothing.
Would you say it was a bad game?
I didn't say anything. Please continue.
Okay. Well, Six hates Street Fighter. Sometimes. That game is very traditional, and it's 2D and with 3D models, and it's the characters that you know since the 80s, and it's just been going for a while, and they kind of iterate on in small ways. It's very, like, mechanical. It's very, like, oh, here is the input that will make this happen. Each character plays extremely uniquely, and that is the game we're playing. We learn our character, and it's 1v1. It's simple. Anime fighters are this whole other thing that often I've noticed, includes things like, Blaze Blue and Guilty Gear and, the one that you like, Eunice, I guess, would you call that?
The franchise is usually called Uniel, but the latest entry is Unist. It's an acronym. Unist.
Right. That whole franchise, more focused on, like, spectacle and, air combos and sort of like creating a combination of moves that will put the opponent into and this is important for describing what happens in the match. But like you do a thing and then you input several inputs in a row really, well timed. And then your opponent has very little that they can do to counter that. But it's a matter of execution and timing. Dragon Ball FighterZ is like the most modern one of those, kind of. It's in this like whole modern era, and you know, a lot of people were attracted to it because it's Dragon Ball. It's the anime that Americans and Japanese are into forever. And it's one of those where, like, the inputs are super simple, but again, it's all about, like, doing big combos. And at first, at the beginning of the finals, because it's like best of, you know, how does it, what is the way that the ordering works? It's like best of three, and then they play three more.
So it's first to three, and mm-hmm. then so in a double elimination tournament, the way it works is if it's a properly run one, you'll see them that aren't properly run, like the international, which is going on right now. If you're doing it honestly, you have to lose twice to be eliminated. That's the double in double elimination. Mm-hmm. So there is going to be someone in the finals who has lost one game, but then stayed alive through the rest of the tournament. And there's going to be someone in finals who hasn't lost at all. That's mm-hmm. just how math works. And so for the person who lost to beat the person who's won, they have to beat them twice, because you have to lose twice to be eliminated.
Right, exactly. So, Goichi is in the loser's bracket, so he has to win twice. And he takes his first win, like, kind of summarily, how I noticed it. It's just like, it feels like Sonic Fox is honestly making some pretty basic mistakes and missing timing and trying moves that he knows aren't really going to work and not switching up his team. And like, it feels like, oh, this is going to be the classic case of like the Japanese player beats the American player hand over foot. And then that's just the end of it. And even the announcers are like, oh, I guess, all right, well, Sonic Fox loses again, you guys. This is unfortunate. And then some magic happens. Sonic Fox decides after their first set that he would like to enact a very old rule. The announcers say that they haven't seen it since a fighting game tournament in 2011. The idea is that you spend the entirety of your games on one side of the screen, but you can flip a coin, and if the coin lands on your side, you get to switch seats with the other player.
Yeah, and this is specifically only in a bracket reset. So the way this works is, since Goichi has to win twice, he's won one, it's technically a new set. And only when that happens, it's like, well, the other player can, well, either player can insist on a side switch, because at the start of a match, technically, whoever's first player and second player is random, so you can insist that it's re-randomized.
Right. And everyone's like, wait, what, really? And they have all these announcers come up to them, and Goichi just looks mad. He's just like, I had you. This was done. And what are you doing? Like, what is this nonsense rule that doesn't make any difference, really, at the end of the day? Like, why are you even asking them to do this? And then the coin flip works, and they switch seats, and it's like a switch has gone off. Now, I'm of the opinion that this was a tactic by Sonic Fox. I don't think it was just a, like, attempt to mix things up. Because what's happening is Goichi is now on a roll. He has a lot of momentum. There isn't like a break in between mat rounds in fighting game tournaments. You just keep going until somebody wins or loses completely. So doing this is like, all right, I need you to stop for like a minute, 2 minutes, and then get out of your seat, get out of your comfort zone, take your headphones off, and look at me and engage with me as a person. And then we're going to reconvene. We're going to do this again. And now we're going to be reset, basically. There's a lot of talk about, like, is this fair? Is this valid? Is the way that he did, like, why did he do this? Did he only win because of this? And I think all it really did was reset the playing field. Like, I think he just did it because it's like, well, I needed to kind of shake off some of the stress and the nerves. And I know I can beat this guy. I just need to, like, kind of get him out of his zone for a second.
And also, I mean, like, so there are a couple of things here. One is that you think about how pro players practice. Right? Mm-hmm. Think about how any fighting game players practice. You go into training mode, right? You're always player one in training mode.
Right.
It's just a psychological comfort for a lot of players. It's like, no, I'm just used to being player one. And there are also, like, I don't think Dragon Ball is one of them, but there are fighting games where it makes a literal difference in the game's code because of some weird quirk. You'll talk about, an example would be Marvel vs. Capcom 3. There are combos you can only do if you're player one.
Really?
Which is fucked up, because that game is kind of a mess. But, like, no, that's total. Or more infamously, like, there aren't very many of those. But more infamously, people talk about, like, there's a character named Zero, who's, you know, Zero from the Mega Man series. And he has, like, his whole game plan is combos that people call lightning loops. And talk to any Zero player, and they'll say lightning loops are physically painful to do on player two side. They're much more pleasant on player one.
Wow. I mean, it's just because you're just doing opposite inputs, right?
Mm-hmm. But the motion just works out such that it's just much more unpleasant if you're on the other side. So, like, there is a legitimate, like, no, I just feel more comfortable on player one side. Like, there's a legit reason that that's fair. But also, there are other reasons that you would not, like, there are plenty of examples you'll see of, like, someone loses a game or two, and then they go to character select, right?
Yeah.
And they don't change characters.
Just to go to the menu, to take a breath.
Right, they just want to take a breath. And sometimes they'll just, like move around on the menu and look at their phone for a second and just shift the momentum just for a moment.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So that's where we're at. And then it seems like Sonic Fox is starting to turn it around. You know, I think Goichi still gets a win in this second part. But Sonic Fox is, like, actually handing it to him. It's completely turned around. And it doesn't end up being a complete sweep in the other direction because... there's this cool mechanic in Dragon Ball Fighters where, since it's a Dragon Ball game, you have to have the Dragon Balls in it. And I don't know, how do you get these Dragon Balls? How do you make them appear?
Can I just say it's complicated, and we'll leave it at that for now?
Yeah. It's important to note that because it's complicated, it doesn't happen often?
No, it happens quite rarely. Like, yeah, it'll, if you have a tournament, it'll probably happen once in a given tournament.
Right. Would you say it's even less common than doing, like, an instant kill in Guilty Gear?
Yes.
Because I figured I've never seen anyone in any professional Guilty Gear that I've watched ever do an instant kill, but I've won ranked games with instant kills before.
Well, so, I mean, like, with Guilty Gear, the instant kill is hard to land, but it's just like, okay, you go into instant kill mode and then
you
do
it. And then you do an input. Right. It's not hard to do.
For the Dragon Balls, again, I'm not going to go too far in the mechanics, but basically there are, like, 10 steps you have to do leading up to it. It's complicated to get there. And you fill out some of those steps by accident. Like, it rarely does someone go into a game being like, I'm going to get all the Dragon Balls. But it's 7 Dragon Balls, and sometimes you're like, I'm at 6. Maybe I should start aiming for it. So.
Right. And that, again, there's the magic. Goichi summons the dragon, gets all the Dragon Balls, and summons the dragon. And you get a bunch of options. You can have one of your characters brought back to life. You can restore your health. You can get bonus damage. I don't know what the fourth one actually is. And he brings one of his characters back to life, and he still loses. And the crowd is going wild. They're like, that's not a thing you see every day. That's pretty crazy. But, like, all right, I mean, he can still turn it around. I believe he does it again. Is that correct?
Yeah.
He fucking does the rarest thing in Dragon Ball Fighters twice in one set of games and still loses. It's bananas. It feels like I can, like, when I'm watching the first round, I'm like, oh, Sonic Fox is me playing any, like, ranked game against someone who really knows what they're doing in anything, where, like, he knows what the moves he needs to do, but he's just not finding openings, and he's making simple mistakes. In the second one, I don't even see him as a human anymore. He's just, like, on a different plane of existence, just, like, knowing how to block, knowing how to take the hits when he needs to, knowing when to go for the big moves, because he's playing, like, you know, a combination of, like, a heavy hitter, a fast character, and I forget who his third was. It was Android, it was Bardock, who's got that really fun little super move. Like, he's playing a very, like, apparently, like, a pretty standard team composition.
His Zamasu is a weird pick, but
One, it seemed like he was picking mostly for the assist, though.
Yeah.
So, he just ends up winning. He just sweeps. And it's amazing. It's fucking bananas.
And so now so Dragon Ball Fighters was the most entered game at Evo. It had, what's the number, like, I don't remember, like, almost 3,000 people enter the tournament.
Wow.
And so as the biggest fighting game, it's sort of like officially, like, whoever's the champion of that is sort of for a year the champion of
Evo.
Right, and therefore the champion of fighting games, because Evo's the biggest tournament there is.
Right.
So currently, the champion of fighting games is a gay furry, and it's wonderful.
Black gay furry.
It's pretty good.
It's everything that makes me happy. It warms my heart. It melts my heart, because here's the other thing. In prepping for this, as I've been, like, learning other fighting games and watching a decent amount of fighting games, you really see different calibers of people based on how much they showboat after winning. You really, like, get a feel for, like, what kind of person someone is. I saw a match, I think it was a Guilty Gear match, where it's, like, the announcer got out of his seat and, like, went up and ran and hugged the winner because he did some cool stuff. Because, like, fighting game tournaments run the gamut from, like, a hall in a hotel room on like a Sunday afternoon that has like 30 people in it playing like Unreal to Evo, which is like the biggest event. It's in fucking Vegas. It's wild.
And even at Evo,
even like, there, even at Evo, it's Sonic Fox.
This is
yeah.
this is gonna sound like a joke, but like, okay, so you've got like Sonic Fox playing this like nearly 3,000 person tournament with 250,000 people watching on the internet, and then you've got in the same building. This is I'm not making this up. In the same building, a couple of floors up in a bathroom, there's a Melty Blood tournament being held with like five people. Evo is nuts. Fighting games are nuts.
Yeah, it runs the whole ringer. It's amazing. And he's like flexing and chanting and screaming and everyone's happy for him. It's amazing to watch. And Goichi, he actually takes it very humbly. He's very like nice about it. I've seen plenty of showboating. I've never seen losers get any way like visually that angry.
I could link you some videos. It's not very often. But, like, there is maybe a person, a professional announcer, who's famous for losing to a 10-year-old girl and then smashing his fight stick.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Knowing how much a fight stick is also breaks my... Ow.
And he's a nice guy, too. He was just so mad.
Come on. Like, ugh. At the end of the day, everyone seems to remember that they're just having a good... Like, they're just playing a game. And then no, it doesn't seem like anybody's taking it, like, ultra seriously. I'm sure there are.
Yeah, again, I could link you some videos, but
yeah. But once I think like well, at least once you're getting to Evo, it's like, all right, well, we're gonna try to be semi-professional about this if we're gonna make it to the top eight or whatever, and get out of pool. Like I was watching a lot of pools this Evo week, the Evo weekend, and people in pools were mostly like pretty good with like decorum, but yeah. Even in all of that, Sonic Fox is just like big fucking furry, is just like putting on the claws and being like growling and chanting to the crowd because he's a He's my hero. I love it so much.
In honor of this, I have picked 10 genius players who I am going to tell you who they would be in Dragon Ball FighterZ, what character represents them.
This is good. This will bridge the gap between the fighting game audience that you bring to this show and the genius audience that listens to the show.
And with all but one character, if you know just regular Dragon Ball, you don't need to know the fighting game for this to make sense to you.
Yeah.
So Doohee is, of course, adult Gohan.
That yes, he is. Oh man!
I think you'll find that every one of my picks is completely perfect.
Why are you throwing rocks? I'm right, and no one else is right but me. It's me, Six. Yeah. So Super Saiyan Man, Super Saiyan Man?
Super Saiyan Man.
Saiyan Man is our boy Doohee. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm into that.
So obviously, Songmin is Vegito.
What?
The perfect mix of like arrogant and self-assured without being a complete asshole.
Wow. I feel like he's becoming Vegeta.
Maybe.
Like straight up Vegeta in this season where he's just like, oh, come on. But he's not that like arrogantly competitive. He's not like the Bakugo kind of like I need to win sort of thing.
You could be right. That's a fair point.
But for now, yeah, I think Vegito is accurate.
Our Jonghyun is, of course, Yamcha.
Yee. People have won with Yamcha before.
That's
it
very
can happen.
True. Yes, Yamcha has won major tournaments, and people called it a fluke, so I think it's a very appropriate comparison.
He's fallen into a hole and died so many times that people forget he's still on the show. Yeah. This works.
Yoon Sun, good lawyer Yoon Sun, is Android 18.
Oh, hell yeah. Good mother to all. Yes. Love it.
However, Kyung Ran is, of course, Android 21.
Oh! That one's for me. Thank you for that one.
that one's the one game exclusive, so you'd have to know the game for that one, I'm afraid.
Or just be on, like, queer Twitter. Ever.
They do love her a lot.
Same.
Sungyu is Gotenks.
Okay, yeah.
Because he's an adorable, lovable brat.
Little evil, little shit gremlin that we love, yeah.
Huijong is Kid Buu. Because boy's got a bit of a temper. And
He's so grumpy. My darling son.
This one's a bit of a stretch. I just I couldn't give Jinho something, so I gave him Cell.
The planner, the thinker, that kind of works.
Yeah, and he's sort of just like there. He's fairly honorable, and he's there for enjoying the fight. It's like, okay, sure. Cha Min Su, or Teacher Cha, is Piccolo, of course.
Everyone's favorite uncle.
And then Gura is Zamasu.
Just a piece of garbage.
Just always screaming about these worthless humans. Like, yeah. Nope, checks out.
Accurate. Oh man, I forgot I miss Gura. No, I don't.
don't lie to me like that.
No. That's beautiful.
All right. Well, with that figured out, do you have any others that we should figure out real quick? Do you have any moments of inspiration of like, oh, actually, this is fucking Nappa.
Shit. Yeah, I think. Let me look at this cast list real quick. I totally had one in my head.
Pung is Nappa.
Uncule is Tien.
Yeah. No. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Where you're just like, oh, why are you here? Oh. All right. You're gone. Okay. Bye. Sorry about that.
Oh. Harsh.
A little bit. Oh well. He's doing magic somewhere with his third eye. Let's tell the kids about the DM.
This was a really good DM.
It is a really good DM. It's Indian Hold'em again. We don't need to talk about the rules again. We know how Indian Hold'em works. This is the second time we've seen it this season. We've also seen Indian Poker 1,000 times. It's straightforward. We know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Alan. If people haven't been able to tell, I was definitely paying a lot more attention this week. And this was the first time that I felt really comfortable, like, understanding the rules fully of both the main match and the DM. My one problem with Indian Hold'em is that it so very, very often does not boil down to getting, like, pairs or straights or whatever. It's just a number, like, high-low game. And I think that makes it somewhat less fun. But Jung Hyun points out in this match that as long as you're okay dealing with percentages and stuff, you don't need to count cards. You don't need to do shit. You just need to go like, oh, he has six. That puts me at almost like a, 60% chance of being higher than him. He's not going to get a match based on what's on the table. I got this. I should call.
Yeah, I feel like the straights and pairs and trips, the three of a kinds, are just there to make the math a little more complicated. I think they're not the focus of the game, but I think that's fine. It's just there to make it a little bit trickier.
It's ostensibly still just Indian poker where it's high-low.
Mm-hmm.
And really, really deeply impressed with Jung Hyun this game. Like, feels like he is in full-on monk mode, right? Like, knows what he's doing, is calm, cool, and collected, zero stress. He's stressing G1 out with how not stressed he is.
Do you recall what he was wearing this episode?
Not immediately.
Black leather pants, black leather jacket, and a gray shirt underneath.
Fucking badass. He's a motorcycle.
He was here to fucking kill. Like, we made that theory about him coming in as a fucking biker to murder everyone. We did it.
You're totally right. He straight up starts this DM like, what if we did Giri? And G1's like, wait, what? Giri? He's like, yeah, do Giri. Hey, dealer, do you want to do Giri rules? And G1's like, no, wait, what's Giri? What are you talking about? He's like, oh, it's where they split the deck, and then we both have the deck before we start. Like, what? Why? No, the reason why is because he's a madman, and he knows what he's doing.
The reason is because he's like, what? We aren't doing this by World Poker Championship rules. Fucking like all my experience from every Thursday playing poker is now gone to like he came here. Fucking like when you are playing casual poker with someone. And you're like, you're both amateurs, and they say, and they're about to deal, and you're like, wait, we didn't cut the deck. Run away.
Just run. Just drop, like, some money and fucking get out of there.
Get out. Like, I think Jung Hyun plays poker, you guys.
Yeah, I think he's, like, extremely good at poker. He has a flawless poker face. Unflinching. Unbreakable. You're basically, the viewer is, like, from G1's perspective, just, like, trying to break what Jung Hyun's doing. Like, what is his strat? And he's kind of playing the fool. He's kind of just being like, oh, I'm just, like, I'm hanging out. We're no RD. Like, it's like some really good comedy again. When the dealer, like, he's has so much control over the game that the dealer is, like, taking chips and he puts cards down and then the dealer gets ready to take something, and he's like, no, wait, what are you doing? Don't take my stuff. Talks back to the dealer, and you're like, no, wait, Jung-hyun, are you gonna like turn to the bandage man and be like, no, don't put the camera there, I tell you what to do.
Did you let your evil twin come to this episode? Like, what's going on?
It's so out of character for Jung-hyun. Whose man's is this? Come collect him.
I think what happened was, so he came into this season of The Genius, and he was like, oh, I'm just so glad to, like, be free of the stress of, like, being in office and, like, campaigning and, like, doing, like, hard-nosed politics, and I can just fucking be an entertainer again. And, like,
right.
He goes, like, and the deathmatch brings out his politician. The deathmatch brings out, like, the former legislator in him, and he's like, no, let's fucking go.
Yeah. I'm here to win. God damn it. It's so good. Sorry, go ahead.
I can't believe how much I underestimated him.
Yeah. I mean, you gotta give it up to Ji-won. He's not, like, completely cracking under this. He's playing pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he loses on one play, losing by one, is, like, kind of unfortunate. But, I mean, he gets a 10-1-2 straight and then plays it correctly and almost turns the whole game around. In that moment, and then you kind of see Jung-hyun like start to go like, oh well, shit, but nope. Even with that, even with all these good plays in a row, where he starts like he'll like bet one, and then Jung-hyun folds, and he'll bet one, and Jung-hyun folds over and over again, and he's like, wow, I guess I'm doing pretty well. I guess this is gonna work out. But we realize by the end that like, no, Jung-hyun was playing you for a fool. You weren't getting shit from him. He wanted you to feel good so that you would bet more, and then you did, and then you lost by 1 point. How do you feel? Get out of here. Goodbye.
I feel like it was a decently, like, it felt decently close, but just Jung-hyun's poker face was so unassailable when the game was over, when it was like, okay, like, Ji-won has all in for the last time. He's out of chips, and, like, you know, like, he has a one. He has the worst possible card. You know that you've won. He still doesn't, his poker face doesn't even, like, flicker. Until the cards are on the table.
Mm-hmm.
It's very impressive.
Like, Ji-won puts it down kind of resigned, knowing he's going to lose, and he hasn't looked at it yet, and he goes, Jung-hyun, did I get a one? And Jung-hyun's like, yeah, you did, bud. You lost to me. Like, he tells him what his card was.
Yeah, like, oh, shit. And it's so, yeah. Even then, his delivery is so poker face. He's like, did I lose? Yes. Did I have a one? Yes. Like,
so oh my god, this is the shit I live for. This is so fun.
And like we say, the editing on this was great, because the game went pretty long. Like, you could tell from the editing that the game went long, but it didn't go that long in the episode. Like, when it was like, oh, okay, things are going to go back and forth for a while, the editing just did its magic, and you could see, like, hands being really quickly played and some chips moving back and forth.
Yep,
but it's like, this is clearly not the critical moment, so we're going to kind of smooth on by. It was very, very well done.
Right, and it kind of is, it almost feels like a dramatic irony, a dramatic tension moment where Ji-won loses the final thing, like, Jung-hyun has a 2 and Ji-won has a 1, but it's like, no, he could have lost that and still survived if he hadn't already been on the gallows. He was ready to lose, and he was already in the loser's, like, side, and then that was just the final nail in the coffin. It wasn't like a single move turned the whole game around.
Right.
And he leaves very humbly. I didn't take any notes about him leaving. He just kind of says, like, I really hope everyone plays well, and I was enjoying playing against you guys.
Well, and he had this line about, like, I kind of don't know how I got this far. Like, obviously, like, people have, you know, and it's, I think we've had this speech before, but I still find it relatable every time where someone's like, there are people who have gone home who are smarter than me.
Yeah.
So really, I feel lucky just to still have been here, to have the experience that I've had. So.
Oh, Ji-won. Go home. Now we got nothing left but bangers. Isn't it awesome?
I think we might have a literal banger. I think Jung-hyun is going to shoot somebody next week.
Someone give Jung-hyun a gun.
He's like, give, and he pulls out like an M1911.
Fuck yeah. Yeah, so now it's Ji-won. No, it's not. It's Jung-hyun, it's Song-min, and it's Ji-won.
Mm-hmm.
We got our top three.
And so both of our players, Song-min and Ji-won, have hung in there, and thus we get some fantasy points for this episode. I had been wondering, like, what's going to happen if the character one of us picks is eliminated before the finale. Like, what do we do? I don't think it's gonna come up.
Yeah. But you think it's gonna be? You think it's gonna end up being the two of us against each other?
I do.
Man, I want it.
And so with our 3x multiplier on points, that means that this week I have 69 points, which is very nice, of course, nice. Of me. And Alan, you have 48.
Okay, that's points.
So I'm overall leading still, and I get to give you homework.
Excellent.
Are you ready for your homework?
Yes.
You mentioned it earlier. I want you to play Unist against me. I want you to play Undernight in Birth, EXE, Latest on the PlayStation 4 Computer Entertainment System in an online networked multiplayer match.
You're not going to, like, come over and play it online, play it in person with me?
That would be a very long trip.
Okay. Is this game expensive? Well, whatever. We'll talk about the specifics. I'm excited. Is it fun? And do you like this game?
I do. I like this game a lot, and I think it's very approachable.
That's good.
It's more approachable than Guilty Gear, and you got into Guilty Gear.
So. And I got into Guilty Gear. Do you want to play some Guilty Gear after this also? Oh, you have shit to do. Anyways.
Lots of shit to do.
Yeah. I always want to play fighting games, so I'm super excited for this. And I will present you with a little bit of the preview that I remember. We have some friends coming back next week.
We do.
Yes. Do you know about it?
I do. I saw the preview this week because I didn't pause in time.
Oh. Yeah, I saw... was it... No, not Huijong was not in there. No, I saw Doohee, and I was like... Fucking bring him back.
This time his shirt is two guns.
Pointed at each other and you at the same time somehow.
They're just pointed at each other, but there's just enough space that he can sidle up and, like, put your head between them.
Yeah, like, yeah, I guess he's going to the chopping block. Motherfuckers. I like this voice for Dewey. Yeah, so very exciting stuff. We're winding down on the season. I hope we're not running low on energy, because if so, then we're going to have to plug it in.
So if you want to find some of my work, you can find me on Twitter at 6detmar, that's SIXDETTMAR. And if you want to find the podcasts and various works that I do, there's a little bumper at the end of the episode. I also want to point out, as I don't very often, that as this is a Scanline Media show, there is a Scanline Media Patreon at patreon.com/scanlinemedia, and you can chip in and get Oops All Anime there, which is a good podcast, and also just sort of help us do stuff, because living is expensive. That's my pitch on helping me survive.
Help her live. Do it. Should I plug my things?
Sure. I would be interested. You know, I feel like we haven't talked much lately, Alan, and I feel like I've lost track. How would I find your work on the internet?
Well, you can listen to me on several other podcasts now, kind of. I'm on, like, more shows. I'm on Fireside Friends, firesidefriends.net, where my friends Ryan, Katie, and I talk about pop culture. We're still on that hiatus. But I do encourage people all the time to please check out our backlog, because I'm incredibly proud of the stuff that we've done in the last couple of years. And if you want more of me and you want some funny people talking about television, you can listen to me on Chats, a television podcast found at wherever you listen to those. It's CHATZ, and it's where my friend Majon and I talk about different TV shows every season. We just finished watching Pushing Daisies, and we are now going to begin watching, well, next week, I guess, Babylon 5, the cult classic sci-fi television show, which is going to be like the next year of my life. So please listen to the podcast, because it's going to be the only thing I talk about anymore.
I thought it was Babylon V.
No, what, different show. Nope. What? No. It's Babylon and, like, a big honking yellow number 5.
Yeah, that's just being a pain in the ass.
Oh, you're classic 6. The reason I mention other shows is if you check out another Patreon, if you still have a couple bucks lying around after backing Scanline Media, patreon.com/chatspod. If you back us there, you can listen to me do movie commentaries every month. And every other week, you can listen to, like, a nightly hangout show or biweekly hangout show where we get extremely real. If you pay us $5 a month, you can hear that and learn all about our personal lives.
Wow.
So peep that stuff.
You can't really peep audio very well.
Peep means, like, to experience, like, to enjoy, like, peep this. Listen to this.
I thought peep was like because you're like peeping with your eyes because it's like an eye thing. It's like
thank you so much for listening to the Garnet Wager. We really appreciate you. And have a good one.
Peace out.
Peace.
You're listening to a Scanline Media Network podcast. Check out our other podcasts like Bottle Crow Reborn.
So here's the thing, Nick.
Nobody cares.
No.
It's not about that.
You actually convinced me.
Shit.
The Garnet Wager.
And immediately we get Yunji being like, so hang on. Why does everyone call Jin-Ho Kong? And Jin-Ho, like, really circuitously explains because they're making fun of me.
Like, it means bean, but it's all, like, small person, and, like, I'm...
Neutral game.
So, if you're averse to frame data, you can still play the game, and it'll just sometimes take longer to figure some stuff out.
Oops, all anime gaiden.
I've known some podcasters with taste, and they're all cowards. Let's talk about today's menu.
Oh my god.
For the Emiya family.
Operation Cereal.
Episode 4 yep. was a bit more understandable, but also, I continue to sour on these kids. I think they're dicks.
Okay, that's fair.
And our patron-only podcast, Oops All Anime.
And he has the blessed privilege of getting an invite. He shreds it in front of her, looks her in the eye, like touches
wipes
her face.
A tear off of her eye.
Wipes a tear off her eye and goes, I'll kill you.
Visit Scanline Media at scanlinemedia.com and our Patreon at patreon.com/scanlinemedia.